The Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Dwell in my love. Dwell in my love. If you heed my commands, you will dwell in my love, as I have heeded my Father's commands and dwell in his love. I have spoken thus to you so that my joy may be in you and your joy complete. This is my commandment: love one another as I have loved you. There is no greater love than this, that a man or woman should lay down their life for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I command you. I call you servants no longer. A servant does not know what his master is about. I have called you friends because I have disclosed to you everything that I heard from my Father. You did not choose me. I chose you. I appointed you to go on and bear fruit, fruit that shall last, so that the Father may give you all that you ask in my name. This is my commandment to you: love one another. I want to backtrack just a little bit on something that I didn't quite complete in my last talk, because I obviously was going to go over my time. But I talked about wanting to care well for myself, body, mind, and spirit. I talked a little bit about body, about eating, and I didn't say I do exercise each morning. I have a certain routine of morning stretches that include what that wonderful physical therapist taught me about my foot and my knees. I work with light weights. I brisk walk in the neighborhood, which is kind of flat and then hilly as well. And I like to swim in the brisk American River. Bess, where are you? I was on the little platform out in the middle of the lake there with Bess the other day, and she shared about yoga. I've had this on my mind because we have several friends in Placerville that go to the local yoga studio. So thank you for sharing about your experience with yoga, because I need that and I want that. I've never been a smoker. My dad was a smoker, and when it came to light that secondhand smoke was not good for children and other living things, my mother asked him to please smoke out on the porch, which he did. He wasn't a heavy smoker, but he used to smoke in the living room. One of my friends at church in San Francisco had a car accident, and she needed a ride to church. So I'd go and pick her up, and she would walk down the inner stairs of her house and meet me at her open garage door. So I'd just pull in her driveway, and she'd close the garage door and come in the car. Well, one time when I got there, she was kind of leaning against the car, and when I drove up into the driveway, she was kind of stumbling toward me, and I realized that I didn't feel comfortable bringing her in the car and bringing her to church, because she was a drinker. I didn't know that she had been a drinker. You know, I always had my water bottle. She always had hers too, but it was metal and you couldn't quite see what was in it. But anyway, she had a little downstairs apartment that she rented, and I knocked on Gwen's door and asked her to help me bring my friend up to her bedroom. Now, that impacted me a lot, because she's my friend, and I saw her going through something that was, in my estimation, very sad. And there were several other people in our circle of friends who I noticed their speech would slur or their behavior would change. And so I just felt a call to be a kind of a silent witness and just intake no alcohol. So I've been alcohol-free for many years. Not that I have anything against it, but it's just what I call a silent witness. That, and if someone asks me, I will talk about it. But I have no problem with other people, you know, having their pleasure of alcohol. I just had that experience that changed me. Okay, more about my habits. I love diversity. I really do. And the next few things I'm going to say makes it sound like I don't like diversity. But we all make our own decisions for ourselves. So one day around 1980, on the way to church, I stopped at the red signal at the red light, and I reached into my purse to get my lipstick like I always do, and it wasn't there. And I thought, oh my gosh, I don't have my lipstick. What am I going to do? And I thought, well, if I go home, I'll be late to church. But if I go to church like this, they're going to see me without my lipstick. And then I thought to myself, if they can't love me without my lipstick, then something's amiss here. Something is amiss. That was around 1980. I haven't worn lipstick or any form of makeup since 1980. So that's how many years? 36 years. Haven't missed it at all. Haven't felt rejected by anybody. It's been great. And, you know, it's cheaper this way, too. You don't have to worry about it. So I like to, I just kind of have the freedom to follow my own guidance, not impose it on anybody else, just this is who I am. It's part of my vibrational life, I think. Now this, I relate to Cheryl's talk last night, because Dennis and I were in an Indian restaurant, and in walked this group of four or five Buddhist nuns. And there was a presence. There was just, I think now, knowing the language you shared with us last night, I think there was a vibrational presence that walked into that room that I really responded to. And they were dressed in very simple habits, and their heads were shaved. And I couldn't take my eyes off of them. I couldn't take my energy away from them. I mean, I was just kind of hooked. Well, from that day, I started wearing a habit. But nobody would ever identify it as a habit, but it was my habit. It was, and I already had these clothes, cotton pants made by Deva. I don't know if you ever knew this little house company called Deva, but cotton pants, a little cotton tunic, and I had three colors that were kind of coordinating. I wore them for 2 years, basically everywhere that I went, and it was a joy. It was a joy not to have to think about it. I just felt very comfortable in that. Then, you know, I outgrew that and other things happened. Dennis did say one thing to me after that event with the Buddhist nuns. He said, "Marcia, please don't shave your head." I wasn't thinking about it, but I didn't. But I like these new styles, you know, this side is shaved and this side, if I had thicker hair, I think I'd have a little more interesting hairstyle. But so my point is, we are free to be ourselves. We really are. And if we don't feel free to be ourselves, well, it's something inside of us that is maybe our growing edge. There was a CFO at our East Bay CFO group, and she had some surgery on her larynx or something, and she'd been away for a while, and she came back. She took the mic, and she said, "I'm no stranger, but I am a little strange." And I thought of that when I was thinking about sharing this, because, you know, I'm no stranger, but I am a little strange, and I suppose we all are. If we all knew about each other's little idiosyncrasies, we'd all be considered a little strange, maybe. Let's see, one more thing related to this. I've shared this scripture with you. Think on these things, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is gracious. Think on these things. This is Philippians 4:8. Well, Dennis and I don't have television reception. We could have it if we wanted it, if we wanted to pay for it, but television doesn't allow me, anyway, to think on the things that really matter to me. I read news online. We get the Christian Science Monitor once a week. We get several magazines. When I read online, I can skim. I don't have to hear everybody's interpretation of what happened, and I can just take it into myself at the level that I feel comfortable taking it in. So we have a screen. We get Netflix movies now and then. They might sit there for a month before we look at them. In fact, there's one right now, and we're gone for 3 weeks. But anyway, so that's another way that I just want to honor something that's true for me. So Jesus said, love one another, and there is no greater love than this, that we lay down our lives for one another. I feel really grateful for my family life, for my friendships, for my church life. When Carl was little, we used to have this kind of pattern where if it was a day that didn't have much going on, I'd say, Carl, I'm yours. I'm yours. Whatever you want to do today, I'm yours. And he'd come up with go to the park, go on a hike, go to the beach. I think I influenced to go to the ice cream store, but I could have moved it in that direction, whatever else we did. But it was so nice because I look back on those times as just totally being present to him and revolving around him. And I feel like this is what the Spirit is saying to us. I'm yours. I'm yours. Call upon me anytime. Take me any place. I'll go with you, even the ice cream store. So I have various things that I could be sharing today, and I may come back to them. Actually, there's one thing I do want to share. My friend Gina and I have been friends since junior high school. And she and her partner, Dee Dee, lived up in Placerville. And we were living in San Francisco. And Dee Dee developed breast cancer and was going through that long process. And I would go up and visit now and then and relieve Gina so she could do various things. But I realized that they needed more help than I could give them living in San Francisco. So I thought, who do I know anybody in Placerville or nearby? Who do I know? Well, I had met a lovely woman at a Sylmar CFO named Wendy Silverthorne. And I thought, well, Placerville is spread out over miles and miles. So I thought, well, I wonder, you know, where Wendy lives in relationship to Dee Dee and Gina. So I got my map out. She lived two blocks away out of this huge span of space. So I called Wendy, and we knew each other pretty well from attending the Asilomar camp, but I explained the situation to her, and it's like she was excited. She was like, oh, I would love to know them. I would love to be present to them. We live so close. And so I don't even remember how it worked out, if I was there when she came down, or anyway. Wendy and Dee Dee and Gina and Wendy Sesmenteri and her kids, Lyle and Lisa, they laid down their lives for them, for Dee Dee and Gina. And Dee Dee had one desire. She didn't want to have a memorial service. She wanted to have a gathering before she passed. And by this time, she was bedbound. So Wendy came up with this great idea, which was invite all the friends, all the people that you'd like to have come. Come up to Wendy's house first. And Wendy would kind of set the tone, let them know Dee Dee's health situation at this time. And Dee Dee asked for one person to come in at a time. In the other room, there was a potluck going on, but Wendy facilitated this wonderful, wonderful gathering for Dee Dee. And that really was her memorial service. She was still there, and we all got to love and greet her. But Wendy and her family laid down their lives for Gina and Dee Dee. Wendy and Gina and I were with Dee Dee as she passed. She did need to be hospitalized for pain control. And so we were there, I think, a couple of nights, overnights with her. And I remembered, you know, I have a friend who's a nurse someplace in Sacramento. Maybe she's a nurse here. So I went to the nurse's station down at, I think it was ICU or hospice, and I said, Do you by any chance know of a nurse named Nancy Bradley? And they said, well, Nancy Bradley, she's the responsible administrator in the hospital tonight. And I said, really? Because I knew Nancy from Asilomar also. I said, really? Well, where is she located? Oh, up on, you know, the fourth floor someplace. So I went up, and there was Nancy. And I shared with her why I was there in the middle of the night. And Nancy came down to Dee Dee's room and really helped us. It was just Nancy's presence more than anything else that she said was, this is a process that pain can be controlled, something we're all going to experience someday. I don't remember your exact words, Nancy. It was more a tone of just helping us relax into this event that was forthcoming. And really, that made your words, your presence made such a difference for Gina and Wendy and for me, because then we could rest more with the process, and it was a very beautiful passing. So I didn't want to share that with you while Nancy is still here. The Divine Plan, Part 3. I believe that God has selected those persons who are to belong to my plan, and that through proximity, mutual attraction, or need, they and I are continually finding each other out. I believe in praying for ever-increasing capacity to love and to serve them, and for greater worthiness to be loved, to be loved and served by them in return. I believe in sending out a prayer to the Father to draw me to those who are meant to help me and to be helped by me in order to express my life together with them. So I'm about to share with you what I called initially, and I'm going to call it this today, a 48-year, how would I say it? A 48-year love story. This is a 48-year love story. And I told you about a little bit about this before, because when I was 21, economics were tight in my pocket, and I decided that I would become a nanny. And I moved into this household with two young girls, and I remember telling you this. The mother, Barbara, was just full of expression and affection, which my birth family was really not very expressive. And the little girls the same. And so I was just, it was like I was lifted to a new level in my life. It's like, Cheryl, your vibrational dimensions, it's like I entered into a vibrational dimension that I hadn't known before. You know, I had tasks. I had to do the dinner dishes and sweep the kitchen floor and help Barbara clean the house on Saturdays and iron those 10 teeny-weeny little white shirts that the girls wore to their private school, clean one every day. And but this was a different family. This was a hands-on family, and they had a family room and a fireplace, and often in the evenings there'd be a fire in the fireplace, and we'd be sitting around, and Barbara would say, "I'd really like a head rub." And one of the girls would jump up and start, you know, massaging the mother's head, and pretty soon I was getting a head rub. I'd never had a head rub in my life. And then another night, one of the girls would say, "Mom, I really need a foot rub tonight." And okay, so we're all putting our feet up and rubbing each other's feet, and it was a new level for me. The girls had, they were bright and beautiful. They were little models, literally. Both of them were in TV shows, and both of them did modeling for clothing things. And Susan actually made a movie, the younger sister. And so they had lives that were different than my own. The father was a military lieutenant colonel at the Presidio. We lived near the Presidio. But every now and then, as the evening wore on, I might be the only one sitting in the family room with the fire still crackling a little bit, and Mary would climb up into my lap. She was a wee little 9-year-old, but she was small, and she would weep. And I would just hold her. She would just weep in my arms. And I really didn't have words. I just held her. This happened 3 or 4 times during the course of this school year. I just was there one school year. And I knew she was suffering. Something inside of her was suffering, but I didn't understand what it was. She was a perfectionist in everything. Piano lessons, dance classes, tennis, diet. She claimed that her legs were not as thin as Shirley Temple's. So this thin little young girl was dieting. I really grew to love this family, and but then at the end of the school year, I had my usual summer job waiting for me in Oakland, and so it was time for me to leave. But I always stayed close with them. Barbara would say, you know, when I was back in school in San Francisco, "Bring your laundry over here and do your laundry here." It was great. It was free. I got usually a meal and hugs. And then I was invited to all the birthday gatherings and everything. I was still part of the family. I would take the girls on outings, go to their school plays. And Mary and I became very close. A very trusting relationship. When she maintained good grades in high school, but during that time in high school, she started smoking, and she wasn't willing to obey her parents' directives. She had an upstairs room, and the stairs going up to her room were just loaded with all of her stuff. And her parents really tried to help her organize her things, but she just didn't seem able to do it. She wouldn't receive my help in cleaning stuff up. And then, all of a sudden, she quit everything. She was in ACT Children's Theater. She had been Juliet in Romeo and Juliet. It was magnificent. She quit that. She quit dancing. She quit piano. She quit tennis. she just went into a spiraling down mode. This began many, many years of a balancing act with medications, which she needed. The medications helped her tremendously. But it took a while, and as she grew and matured, those medications needed to be balanced. Eventually, she was diagnosed as schizophrenic. And she was hospitalized from time to time, and she really suffered. She got into UC Berkeley, and her parents were so excited. She had a room in the dorm and everything. She was there for one day. She was not able to adjust to such a life, although she had the intelligence. So her nutrition was spiraling down with the heavy smoking. She became anorexic. I remember when Carl was born. She was hospitalized with anorexia, and I took this pudgy little sweet baby to visit her, and her thin, thin, thin little arms held him. And I'll never forget that moment because it was a precious moment. It was a precious moment. So through all this, remember, this is a 48-year love story. Through all this, I was very bonded with Mary. We were safe together. She actually decided to attend City College, San Francisco City College, and she took courses to become a certified nursing assistant, a CNA. She actually completed that course of study. But her grooming was so disheveled, and her ways of being. Let's be prayerful right now. God, we thank you for your presence here. I ask your blessings upon Jan and Judy. And thank you that all is well. I see that all is well. Dennis and I got married and we bought, let's be prayerful together. God, we ask your tender, loving touch upon Judy. We embrace her with our love, our compassion, and Jan as well. We know that you are with them and guiding and bringing comfort. Thank you, God. Amen. So we bought our home, and it had an upstairs apartment. Mary was 21 at this point. She was 9 when I met her. And Dennis and I decided to invite her to come and live in the upstairs apartment because we thought, you know, maybe being around us and being close by, we could be helpful to her and helpful to her family, and was off to a good start. We all had hope. The parents had hope. Mary had hope. I helped her maintain the apartment. She actually wanted a roommate, which she got a roommate. And things were going along pretty well. She had a job downtown in a bakery. And I would try to encourage her to clean her fingernails and kind of take care of her body and her clothing. I remember Dennis has one story. He's a gardener. He was growing these beautiful gonna check my timing here. 10:15? Okay. He was growing these beautiful sweet peas. And one day he came out and all the beautiful sweet peas were gone. Because Mary had come down and cut them and made a beautiful bouquet and taken it upstairs. So I really appreciated Dennis's willingness to extend himself like this. Well, that relationship with Mary living upstairs ended when she threw a big vase out the upstairs window and it crashed down on the sidewalk and shards of glass, and it was time for her to get some more help that we were not able to give her, although our love always stayed with her. She needed to be hospitalized at that time. And over the years, we just shared our lives together. There were various ins and outs, locations for her. But then the big surprise happened. Her parents had moved down in the Monterey area. Mary was kind of living on the fringe. They bought a little cottage for Mary, near, not, you know, 20-minute drive from their home, and they replaced her old car with a workable car. They furnished her home. They made it a beautiful space, and Mary moved in, and it was an incredible gift. And Mary looked back, with that was the best gift of her life, the beautiful little cottage. She could have her cat there. We went to the animal shelter because she wanted a dog. She got a little dog. It was just fabulous. And we would go visit her parents together. And she got a fabulous new therapist named Mary. And I want to quote something from the Sun magazine. It's this July issue. This was an interview with Gary Greenberg, a psychologist. Freud said that psychoanalysis is a cure through love. I think it is essentially correct. The love is conveyed not so much in the content as in the form. The rapt attention of someone who cares enough to interrogate you. The love stows away in the conversation. Most therapy stories don't do justice to that phenomenon. Well, I give Mary Lounsbury, the therapist, great credit, because I would bring Mary, her sister would bring her. Mary Lounsbury would not only embrace Mary, she would embrace us. And she was just the warmest, most loving person. And so it was a wonderful period in Mary's time. In 2001, Mary's parents invited me to come down to visit them, and they had a proposal for me, which was after they passed, they were both aging, they asked if I would agree to be remembered in their trust that was managed by their lawyer, to be a personal care provider for Mary, to stay with her, follow her, love her, support her, be a foundation for her, to visit every other week and be available for phone calls, just like her parents were. And this was my joy. That began in 2002, then, after her parents had both passed. And Dennis and I had talked this over as well, because it was a big commitment on my part, especially once we moved to Placerville. It was a 5-hour drive, so I'd be spending a night down there as well. Mary really stabilized pretty well in her home, but it was always disorderly once she got settled, you know. Sometimes we'd be sitting out in the garden and there'd be a bird on the fence chirping, and Mary would think that bird was responding to her thoughts. Or a dog would be barking, and she was sure that dog was reading her mind. And her schizophrenia got more exaggerated, plus the smoking. She had to have part of the lung removed, and that really set her back, and have 24-hour care in her home, which she hated. And eventually, it was about 4 years ago, Mary refused to take her medications. She made the choice. She refused. And She spiraled down so severely that she needed to be in a psychiatric facility for healing. And thankfully, she had wonderful care. She really did. And her medications, you know, she was willing to go back on her medications. They got them balanced again. And she lived for 4 more years in 2 different board and care homes. And these were, it was beautiful because board and care homes, at least the ones that Mary were in, the residents were so tuned into each other. The staff was kind of busy doing their thing and making sure everything was done, but the residents would just companion each other. And in the first place, everybody smoked, so, and it was in the garage, and this is what they did, but they shared their lives together. You know, in their own way, they went up this ladder. They shared at a very deep level. And then Mary needed more physical care. She needed to move to another facility that also was wonderful care. I wrote, this was something I wrote on October 19th, 2015. Mary was taking a nap after this happened. Elder, tall, slim, slight accent from Mexico, Frank, arrived at the board and care with a black jacket and a small bag of clothes. The residents walked behind him down the hall, tap, 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 along the floor moldings with his white cane, becoming familiar with the hallways, tap, tap, tap. Mary's door is on the left, tap, tap, tap. The bathroom is on the right, tap, tap, tap. Straight ahead and to the left, tap, 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 is your room. The household bonded around Frank. With their help, he navigated well around the house, and they became a community, a beautiful community. Tap, tap, tap. Hi, Mary. Hi, Frank. Mary called back. Frank took long showers, singing. I wonder what he's doing in there, Doris asked with her toothless smile, laughingly. Today, 3 months later, Frank's insurance expires. He packs up his few clothes, a plastic bag full of meds, papers to sign. Johnny, the administrator, prepares to take Frank to his friends. Then what? We don't know. A shelter? The residents come into the living room one by one. Goodbye, Frank. We'll miss you. Godspeed, Frank. Mary said, Frank, lean down. I want to kiss you. She stood up feebly with her cane and kissed him on the lips. We all had tears in our eyes as Johnny led Frank out to the car. Somehow, oh, I need to continue to say, Mary lived a few months longer. She passed on December 23rd, simply out of her lungs no longer being able to process oxygen, out of many, many years of 3 packs a day. In her later, the last year at least, she couldn't do that because she couldn't get out to the porch where she could smoke. But anyway, she passed. Her sister was with her. That was, of course, I would love to have been with her, but it was best that her sister was there. I didn't know until the next morning that she had even gone into the hospital. We never know what is going to carry us up to a different level of energetic responsiveness and fullness in our lives. Also, some things that might look tragic can have a beautiful, beautiful, nourishing, supportive role to play on this earth. Mary was 57 when she passed. She lived much longer than her parents certainly ever expected her to live. And it was a great joy. I believe that God has selected those persons who are to belong to my plan, and that through proximity, mutual attraction, or need, they and I are continually finding each other out. I believe in praying for ever-increasing capacity to love and serve them, and for greater worthiness to be loved and served by them in return. I believe in sending out a prayer to the Father to draw me to those who are meant to help me and to be helped by me in order to express my life together with them. God, we send up a prayer to you now. Thank you for this incredible camp, this incredible opportunity that you give us all to grow in spirit and in truth. Thank you for drawing us to those people who we are meant to serve and who are serving us. It is a great flow that you have created for us. I give you deep thanks. Amen.
Let's climb the ladder together. As we make our way to the rhythms field to continue giving God glory and blessing one another, if you are able, bring a chair with you so we have more chairs than normal, because this is really our camp's blessing service time and we want as many people as possible. If you see a friend wandering off, say, oh, come get your blessing. Let's scoop everybody in, shepherd everybody in to be together as one flock. Thank you.